The Seductive Language Black Book, Module 3, with Dr. Steve G. Jones. Number 4, The Indirect Path. The seducer has always been portrayed as someone who is very direct and to the point when it comes to achieving their aims. But what if I tell you that the direct approach isn't always the best approach? You see, unless your subject is already fully engaged in your message and your views as a natural leader, it's unlikely they would appreciate a very direct approach. The most common reaction to the direct approach is resistance. And if internal resistance occurs without you knowing it, it's likely that you won't be able to compensate for it later on. The indirect path to seduction can be achieved through this formula. Main intention leads to derive indirect angle, leads to subject feedback, which leads to adjustments. Here are some examples. Direct. I want you so bad. I want you. Indirect. I find you fascinating, to say the least. Direct. You can be my business partner instead of Mike. Indirect. What do you think of a potentially profitable business partnership? Mike told me that he's starting a new business. Might work because our lifestyles jive, right? Realize that the more indirect your approach to seducing your subject, the more leeway you have in terms of adjusting to your subject's feedback. Think of seduction as stalking a tiger or a grizzly bear. If you run toward a giant wild animal, screaming and waving your arms around, you just might get what you're looking for. However, if you stay out of the animal's line of direct vision, you become part of the environment, a non-threatening element. When applied to seduction, this idea becomes extra useful in making your subject feel that they are secure with you around. Of course, this is a very powerful concept, and it's easy to be tempted to use it for unethical intentions. Unethical intentions also have a tendency to backfire, so it's clear that you have to be fair with your dealings with your subject so that you won't have to deal with the negative consequences later on. Now, another advantage of taking a more indirect path in seducing is that you can design your statements in such a way that they will have multiple meanings and underpinnings. For example, if you're seducing someone so that they will support your idea in front of other people, you can use underpinned messages that revolve around the themes of success and reward, or even standing up to the man. Your prior knowledge about your subject should be able to give you a good idea as to what type of underpinned messages would work best. The formula for underpinned messages is central intention leads to derive subconscious message, which leads to create underpinned message. Number 5, playful love. The idea of love is so powerful that it can even be effectively used in influencing others. One of the little-known secrets of seduction is that you can project your words and actions in such a way that you emanate love effortlessly. It all boils down to what we understand as love. Love is a very broad concept, and its meaning tends to slip and slide depending on the situation, which makes it an even more flexible concept for the seducer. Here is the formula for this technique. Subject feedback leads to central desire or need, which leads to reformulate desire with intention. The key to seduction success is understanding what your subject wants or needs even before they realize it. Desires and needs actually escape a person's subconscious mind frequently in conversation. You have to develop an ear for it. Listen for key words that will reveal your subject's deepest and most secret desires. For example, if your subject keeps mentioning luxury cars or big houses, they are obviously attracted to the idea of acquiring extreme wealth. There are many ways to emanate love indirectly: by showing interest in the subject's desires and motivations, by contributing useful information to the subject, by sharing stories about similar pursuits and interests, by imparting your knowledge and/or expertise about the subject's central interest. In a way, this technique helps shift the dynamics during the conversation. If we were to compare the shift to personal relationships, you can gradually change your position from friend to your subjects to lover by deepening your engagement and interest in what your subject values the most in life. Why does this work? There are two distinct concepts that will help you understand why even the hint of love is so effective in seducing people. The first one is the law of supply and demand. There's typically a lot of demand for people who care. In fact, this is one of the key traits that leaders look for in members and followers. Unfortunately, only a handful of people will show genuine concern and interest and love for another person's endeavor. This is called scarcity. That's why love is so seductive, because it's always in short supply. However, I wouldn't advise that you only pretend to care for someone, because being a person who pretends is a form of deceit, and deceit will eventually be found out. Here are some additional tips to make the technique doubly effective. Strive to be genuine in all your transactions with the subject. Sincerity may force you to say things that may be received negatively by your subject. You can be genuine about certain things that your subject wants to believe in, and that's the ticket to their heart. Don't pretend. You will be found out, and if you are, your subject will resist and reject you permanently. It's easy for people to judge others, especially if deceit was in the air. Even if you have the purest of intentions, pretending is still pretending, no matter how you dress it up. Become a trusted advisor. Instead of trying to dominate your subject, position yourself as an equal, someone your subject can trust. Let your subject pour their heart out to you. Let your subject share the smallest and most mundane details, and give each story and conversation your utmost attention. Make your subject as comfortable as possible with the idea of relating anything and everything to you. Let conversation be open to trust and seal the passage so that it will never close again. Be indirect 99% of the time. The 99% represents the entire effort needed to succeed in seducing someone. The remaining 1% is the final effort that seals the deal and ensures the success of the seducer. As in the game of chess, you spend a long time thinking of which piece to move, how and why to make that move. The final physical step, moving the piece, is seemingly insignificant, and yet it completes the action and gives meaning to all the planning that went into the game. Have wonderful conversations. Nothing soothes a confused and suspicious ego more than great conversation. Only the most antisocial individuals would turn away from the opportunity to have a great conversation. And actually, meeting such a person is highly unlikely, this type of antisocial person. Engaging your subjects in meaningful, memorable, and enjoyable conversations is the hallmark of genuine friendship. It's not possible to position yourself as a lover if your subject barely considers you as a friend. Of course, there may be some exceptions if the context is physical intimacy, as this may take place even if the two people involved don't have a meaningful relationship with each other. Lead by following. Seduction is all about taking control of the general direction of the interaction, as shaped by your central intention to obtain good results. It's not about having complete control of your subject. If you force your subject to follow your lead at every turn, they may reject you, since no one likes being controlled. Allow your subject to lead the conversation, but at the same time, be sure that your subject stays on track with your main intention or what you want to have happen. Number 6, golden moments. How can you ensure that your subject remains engaged and completely absorbed in you and your words? The human mind is notoriously easy to distract. It is estimated that the average man or woman only has a maximum of 15 minutes to pay attention to a particular subject before attention begins to wane. This is obviously a big challenge to a seducer, because successful seductions require time and effort in order to work. If the seducer doesn't have sufficient time to implement their strategy, the outcome may become incomplete or half-baked. You can create more time and wiggle space for yourself by using sensorial language. The linguistic technique is summarized in the following formula. Context leads to subject feedback, which leads to central intention, which leads to VAKOG identification, which leads to formulate statements and apply, which leads to feedback, which leads to adjustments. This technique is a hybrid of seduction and neurolinguistic programming, NLP. We need NLP to be able to create golden moments or unforgettable mental experiences that will serve as reminders to your subject that you are worth listening to. Since this technique involves several elements, let's review each one of them so that there's no confusion. The context is the background story, or what the interaction is all about. Examine the context closely to see if you're very clear on why you're seducing your subject in the first place. Reestablishing the context of the conversation can also give you additional insights regarding your current position in the interaction and your desired position. These two positions will become clearer as you proceed with the interaction. Be sure to practice active listening when interacting with your subject so that you can elicit subject feedback continuously. Subject feedback is necessary if you want to keep track of the effectiveness of your seduction methods. Feedback becomes even more important when you begin indirectly hinting about what your central intentions are. The centerpiece of this technique is the VAKOG method. If you aren't familiar with the acronym, it simply means V for visual, A for auditory, K for kinesthetic, O for olfactory, and G for gustatory. Gustatory pertains to taste. The VAKOG system is a communications model that centers on how people perceive and understand the world through their senses. Using the VAKOG method also presupposes that people use some form of representational system when they communicate with other people. Some people are dominantly visual, while others use a combination of visual, auditory, and kinesthetic. Classical NLP states that the olfactory and gustatory representational systems are seldom used to understand and express. If you wish to create golden moments during a conversation, you have to start tracking your subject's dominant representational system as they begin talking. Detecting a person's representational system is quite easy. Simply wait for the subject to use distinct words while attempting to express or explain something. You will notice that people are more likely to use terms that are closely linked with their favorite representational systems. Consider the following examples. Visual. I see your point there. Let me see the light. Auditory. I heard you the first time. Your words are like music to my ears. Kinesthetic. I feel for everyone who was hurt. May good fortune touch their lives beginning today. Understand that the next step is to apply the VAKOG method so that you can create unique mental experiences for your subject using the representational system that they refer to the most. Simply use the terms and concepts that are related to the target representational system and see how responsive your subject is to these statements. If all goes well, your subject will harmonize with you more quickly because you're essentially speaking your subject's favorite language. Gathering feedback is still crucial after the application of the VAKOG method. Adjust how you apply the VAKOG method and get the best results. You only need to observe one indicator while talking to your subject. Is your subject agreeing or disagreeing with you more after appealing to the representational system? If the answer is yes, then simply continue with what you're doing. If the answer is no, then it's possible that your subject uses a different representational system, depending on the situation. Work backwards to find out which is which. For example, if your subject was using the visual representational system when the conversation was still light and humorous, was there any significant shift when you started talking about more serious concerns? Did your subject's choice of words change too? Now I'd like you to join me in the next module. I'm Dr. Steve G. Jones, hoping you have an outstanding day.